And joining me in the KRVS studios this afternoon are Philip Speer and Rudy Eisenzoff, here to talk about Acting Unlimited Incorporated's production of Superman, which opens tomorrow evening at Theater 810. And it is Superman because it is about two men who created Superman.
That's right.
And it's kind of been sort of, you know, on Facebook, and maybe people have read a little something about it, but it's still shocking. Even when I went back over this press release, it's just shocking to hear that story. It's a play by Adam Esquenazi Douglas, and it's based upon the true story of the guys who did Superman.
Yeah, they were two Jews from Ohio. Actually, Joe Shuster is Canadian.
All right. And about what time are we talking? When was this happening that the two were creating the series?
The play is set in 1941, but mm-hmm. the first Superman comic actually came out in 1938.
Okay. And, you know, this is really not one where you're kind of giving away the entire plot. I mean, we know that Superman became a well-known series. I guess the introduction of the tragedy of what happened to the copyright with them is really what makes the crux of this story.
Yeah, I mean, they started off as two guys who worked so poor that they started off drawing on the back of butcher paper and mm-hmm. Canadian mm-hmm. wallpaper samples.
Yeah.
And they had to submit all these things in, and finally they hit a big break. And then, of course, dealing with the representative at the comics company proves to be a bit of a challenge, to put it one way.
Mm-hmm. Now, does this play, is it kind of historical fiction, or does it follow the story pretty closely, Rudy? You've done a lot of research into the story.
Yeah, it's there's things that have been altered. I mean, you couldn't do it exactly like mm-hmm. it was, especially if you look. There's so many different versions of what happened. And the legal battles continued for so long that stories have been changed. But for the most part, yeah. I mean, because Harry Donenfeld, who's the publisher, really, he was the face of the company, but he wasn't the businessman of mm-hmm. the company. Mm-hmm. But in the play, he's kind of the guy
that
everybody's
going to
throw, you know, wet sponges at.
Okay.
So,
and what was the company that originally did Superman?
It's Detective Comics. The publishing company was National Allied Publications. Detective Comics then became DC Comics.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But Harry Donenfeld had a hand in the creation of DC Comics, Marvel Comics. He was one of the first publishers of distributors of Playboy magazine. I mean, he had his hand in everything.
This is the part you play.
Yeah.
All right. And we have to tell people that this is actually kind of a regional premiere where your character wasn't in the original play, Superman, and it's been written in.
Yeah. From what I understand, that's correct.
Right. And so this is the premiere of that particular version of mm-hmm. the play. What is it like playing such an evil character?
It's fun.
It's fun. All right.
It's a lot of fun.
All right. When you heard about this play, did you read it before you went to audition for it, or you just heard about the character?
No, actually, Cody approached me during the production of Urinetown, said, I got something for you to read. He gave it to me, and I read it, and I said, yeah, I want to do it.
Okay. So he thought about you when he saw the character.
That's
And we have to tell people, you have been in many plays for a number of years here in this area, mm-hmm. and have probably played a full range of characters.
I've been blessed to be able to do that, yes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So you've done both good and evil characters.
Yeah, some very evil characters and some very good characters,
mm-hmm.
yeah.
And where does this guy rate in that mix? Is he pretty much up there? Or?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, he is not a nice guy. If I do it right, people are going to walk out of the theater not liking me.
Okay, well, that's one of the things that you deal with if you're an actor, that people associate you with a character. Well,
it's pretty easy to walk out of rehearsal and hate him, but it's okay.
Especially since you're directly affected by his character. Mm-hmm. Well, in order to give people a sense of just how bad your character is, let's talk about the two people whose lives you affect.
That's exactly right.
Joe Shuster, who you play, Philip, mm-hmm. and Jerry Siegel. Are those the actual names of the two?
Yeah, that's them.
The writer mm-hmm. and the artist. So you split. One was the writer, one was the artist, and the character you play is the artist. Tell us about those two guys. How would you describe them?
Joe and Jerry are two guys, honestly, who are at this point trying to make their dreams come true. I mean, they came out of Ohio, you know, and as I said, they were drawing on butcher paper and Canadian wallpaper samples and everything, just trying to get their name out of there. And they had a couple of characters before they originally came up with Superman. They had
Dr. Occult.
That's it. Thank you, Dr. Occult, who was kind of a, you know, mystery detective, more or less, and Slam Bradley.
Mm-hmm.
And those two characters are sort of mentioned as side sort of throwaway lines because they come up in the first scene whenever eventually they do start talking about, hey, I got this new super thing that we inked. I'm going to bring it down to Donenfeld's office. And that's that. So we come in before we really know and they really know who the character of Superman is. And then as the play progresses, we sort of get various we come in at different times to see how successful Superman has been. And we can see the start of his I guess, legendary status to eventually mm-hmm. where he becomes probably one of the most well-known American icons.
Well, what was in the minds of Jerry and Joe when they created this character? He's so iconic now. It's hard to imagine American pop culture without him. But what were they thinking? What were they trying for?
A lot of it comes from the backgrounds of those two characters. Mm-hmm. From at that point in time, getting the sense from this play, being a Jewish person in the United States was not
easy. This is pre-World War II.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So they went through a lot of you know, hardships and sort of public opinion very much turned against them. And there is a reason, I don't want to give it away too much, for why the character of Superman is the way he is, you know, this big, strong, good-natured, invincible guy that comes out of nowhere and doesn't, you know, he doesn't fight for himself. He does things purely for the public good, you know, truth, justice in the American way and all that.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And there's a very strong and a very personal reason why he's that way.
Okay. Now, your character, Joe, was the artist, so you drew the images and Jerry wrote the text for the comic books. How long did it take your character to actually create that final version of what we think of as, in our minds, what Superman looks like?
The design went through a number of iterations over the years, and Rudy, correct me if I'm wrong here, I believe whenever they first had the idea of a Superman, it was actually kind of a sinister villainy type?
Well, yeah. I mean, it wasn't anywhere close to what we think of as Superman
mm-hmm.
now.
Mm-hmm.
The whole Superman symbol was different. The shield was different. But the storyline was the same.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, coming from another planet and growing up, being adopted, that was all there from the beginning.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the idea of someone that could come in from another culture and yet become a hero in the eyes of the American public was an idea that resonated very strongly with Joe and Jerry.
Yes.
Yeah, that's really the crux of the story is where their motivation came from. And what it was like for them
at
as
that
Jewish
time in
people,
the United States, yeah,
yeah, mm-hmm. and you know, and also it shows that Jerry was drafted and went to war, and Philip does a great job in his monologue of explaining that motivation, where it comes from.
Mm-hmm.
It's incredible.
Well, describe the two of you personally. What types of people are you? Are you very similar? Are you shy? Are you what's your character like?
Joe is a good guy.
Mm-hmm.
He's a good guy. He cares very, very much about Jerry. I believe I read that these guys have been united since early in their lives, either middle or high school, and they became best friends and realized one drew and one wrote. So they've teamed up and did a lot of stuff over the years. But Joe cares very deeply about Jerry, about how Jerry's reactions to you know the insults, the indignities he has to put up with,
right,
as part of their shared Jewish ancestry. As for how much I'm like him, I think a bit, certainly. I mean, you have to find that part of you that's like you for every character.
Mm-hmm.
And Joe's very good-natured. He's pretty happy in a lot of ways. And he kind of he acts as a he may have, you know, pie in the sky dreams like everyone else, but I think he acts as sort of a grounder and a dampener for Jerry to sort of, you know, say it's not all bad, we can get through this, we've gotten through worse before, we'll survive, that's what
so
we do.
So Jerry, the writer of the text, is not nearly as optimistic as you are. Is he more inclined
he's more radical, I'd say.
He's very
That's a part of the story we don't want to give away, but yeah, he's very much
very passionate person.
And who plays Jerry?
Jerry is played by Gerard Ducharme, who I believe I pronounced his name correctly.
Yes,
if not,
Ducharme.
I'm sure he'll tell me.
He'll tell you. Yeah, I'm sure it's going to be on Facebook already.
Yeah, I'll wait for it.
If you are just tuning in, my guests are Philip Spear and Rudy Eisenzoff, who are appearing in Acting Unlimited Incorporated's production of Supermen. It opens tomorrow at Theater 810 and runs through the weekend. Philip Spear plays one of the two artists who created Superman, and Rudy Eisenzoff plays the evil character in the play. How much interaction do you have with these two nice guys, these two characters, and what is how does your relationship with them develop?
Well, it starts with me kind of like a salesman. I'm trying to sell them. I'm trying to get them to sign the contract, and it runs all the way through to the climax.
So it's bitter. So what is your motivation? Describe your character. Really, what's driving you? And
money.
Money. So the bottom
line.
No,
I mean, in Harry Donenfeld's life, was it. I mean, he started by selling women's clothes. I think it was in New Jersey. He then joined his family's printing company, ended up forcing his family, his brothers, out of the printing company, changing the name of the printing company. He was a bootlegger for the mob, bringing in Canadian whiskey during
Prohibition.
Mm-hmm. He distributed what they called socialist propaganda. He helped Margaret Sanger with her posters and handing out condoms and everything. He got in trouble for that. He published pornography. He was the first person to actually publish a full nude, and he got in trouble for that. He ran
the gamut.
Yeah,
of
I mean,
activities.
He would help a company that was struggling, and then buy them and force them out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's how he ended up with National Allied Publications,
which is the comic book company that first published Superman.
That's, I mean, it's a little confusing. I mean, the actual publishing company, I mean, the actual company is Detective Comics, which became DC Comics. But the whole umbrella corporation, I guess, would be the National Allied Publications.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of interesting, the activities you describe him doing. Some of them seem to be altruistic, actually. I mean, to go from a mobster working, running alcohol, to helping with socialist activities, helping Margaret Sanger. And these seem like very good activities.
Yeah, but I'm sure he got paid for it.
Okay. So he was helping for profit.
Yeah.
Yeah, for those things.
I mean, the story goes, and what it was, in 1941, DC Comics, or Detective Comics, National Allied Publications, brought in $2.6 million, which was the equivalent of about $42 million today. Most of that based, I'd say 99% of it based on Superman, while Jerry and Joe were just collecting their regular artist salary.
Mm-hmm. Was this something that the two characters were aware of at the time? Were you aware how much Superman was bringing in?
Whenever there are a couple scenes of Jerry and Joe in Donenfeld's office, and he's going on, as he said, sort of trying to sell them the idea of signing this contract. And he very much makes it known that Superman is selling like crazy. And I'm sure Jerry and Joe saw this, you know, this sort of sweeping out of the character. But I think aside from the artist salary, the only additional compensation they got was a $130.
It actually was $130.
Yeah, $130 check.
With the company making millions and millions of dollars on Superman.
You know, now there's a more to this story. They would give bonuses throughout the year. Ended up that at one point they were at their retirement or towards their retirement, they were guaranteed $35,000 a year for the rest of their life. All their medical was paid for. They didn't have anything to worry about. But when you consider that in 1 year, Superman brought the equivalent of $42 million.
Yeah.
Thank you for the $35,000. Mm-hmm.
So did the two characters actually end up working for this company for the rest of their lives?
No.
Okay.
And Joe Shuster went on to draw some very questionable things.
Uh-huh. Interesting. Yeah. Interesting is one way of putting it.
Yeah. If anybody's interested, just, you know, kind of Google online. Joe Shuster drawings and you'll see.
Right. And did Jerry continue writing for comics?
You know, I really don't know. Mm-hmm. I haven't gotten that far in my research yet. Mm-hmm. So
in your opinion, I've not read the play. After reading it, acting in it, do you really feel it gives a really good picture of these two guys and almost kind of an American tragedy? I mean, this is sort of it becomes a metaphor in a way for something else. Do you think it really stays a personal story, or does it become something bigger? Is he commenting on, I guess, the way artists are treated in corporations?
I mean, I have my opinion.
Mm-hmm. Philip or whichever?
Yeah, I feel like it's absolutely a personal story. Yeah. Throughout. Mm-hmm. I mean, absolutely. Obviously, there's the backdrop of it being a larger part in the creation of Superman, one of the most well-known American icons. But from the start of the play to the end of the play, it's a story about these two guys and why they made the character of Superman the way he is, and a little bit of the legal battle that we see. There's actually a side story presented as a series of monologues by Allie, who's also in the play and does a wonderful job with her monologues. She plays a representative of the estate of these two gentlemen in more or less modern times, honestly, about maybe 10 to 15 years ago at the earliest, who sort of presents us a companion piece to what's going on in the play. And it's, you know, nowadays, whenever we've got so many arguments going on about digital rights management, you know, freedom of information and how I should travel, internet piracy, it's still a very relevant topic of, you know, whenever you create something and you know, before, if you wanted to get into the music industry, you almost had to go through a record label whose practices have been pretty well documented as not exactly being the most generous of practices. But nowadays, anyone with an internet connection can go. You can go to Bandcamp or iTunes and put your music out there for anyone to listen to, and you don't have to go through these gigantic companies. Mm-hmm. So that I think is a fantastic development of technology, I think, to where if we had had that kind of thing back then, if these two guys had something like the internet where they could have put their material out there without having to go through a massive publication, you know, they may not have even been in a legal rights battle, but that wasn't the way things were.
Other issues as well. Yeah. And we do have to say that Philip Spear, you're in graduate school in computer science here at UL Lafayette. So that's all you're very comfortable and familiar talking about that whole world of tech and putting things up on the internet. Now, you believe that it was a very personal story. And until this rewrite, really, it was focused more just on those two characters.
But I think it's still a very personal. The scenes with Donenfeld kind of bolster that personal story.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And there's another character, Annie, played by Elaine Kibitow, who is, at the time, Joe's girlfriend.
Mm-hmm.
And as we discovered in real life, ended up actually marrying Jerry.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. But that doesn't happen in the play.
No. And supposedly she is the inspiration for
Lois Lane.
Lois Lane.
All right. Well, people will rush to those comics to take a look at some of those people again and read more about the history. I don't think everyone, you know, really knows much about the history.
No, and there is a lot out there. A lot.
Well, if you are just tuning in, we are talking about Superman, the two who created Superman. My guests are in the play Superman, which is being put on by Acting Unlimited Incorporated. Philip Spear plays Joe Shuster, the artist, and Rudy Eisenhoff plays say his name again?
Harry Donenfeld.
Harry Donenfeld. And you can just hear the evil music coming up behind him there.
Yeah.
So it takes place at Theater 810, which is very intimate space. So intense plays like this do really well there. You're right there. There's only about 50 seats in Theater 810. Who's done the set design for the play?
Cody, pretty much.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, they had a few liner notes, but Cody added in his own personal style. But it's a very good space, you know, sort of accurately modeling a apartment that would just be used by these two guys. You know,
right.
They got a bedroom somewhere offstage and a kitchen somewhere offstage, but the living room is really where all the scenes happen.
Mm-hmm. And is there sort of an office where they go?
The apartment is the center stage. Donenfeld's office is off on the one side, and the representative is off on the other.
Mm-hmm.
And it just, with lighting tricks, thanks to Rick, we're able to just stay in our space.
It takes a lot of creative set design in that space at Theater 810.
Yeah.
Works very well,
yeah.
But takes a lot of creativity. Are your costumes period? 30s, 40s?
They're about as accurate as we could get them.
Kind of a nod to that period.
It's hard to in 3 weeks' time to gather the exact stuff that you need, you know, so.
Right, yeah, a little hat here and something that sort of looks like the 30s. Now, are there any instances where you actually have to draw on stage? I mean, you are the artist. You have to show people.
Technically, there's one where I do pour a lot of drawing that Joe has done on the spot, and there's a few instances where I make some corrections. But my talents lie in using a keyboard, not so much in using a pencil and paper. So actually, pretty much all the drawings that you see in Joseph's little space of the apartment and the one that he holds up are all done by Rudy, actually, who is far more talented than I am in that endeavor. We got some sketches up on butcher paper and, you know, some pictures of Superman and other stuff that were modeled after Joe Shuster's actual drawings that we've put up in the space and used to decorate it.
Which, as you mentioned, were a little different in the beginning than what we think of as the finish.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's really, I mean, and at the time there'll be some rough sketches of Superman, but there'll be other sketches of Dr. Occult, Sam,
Slam Bradley.
The other characters that you created as well. So what year was, I guess, Superman finalized, the form? And was that you that actually fleshed out the Superman as we think of him today?
Yeah.
That was Joe
Superman number 1, 1938. I think it was in September 1938.
Most people
Superman 1, really, we would all recognize him.
Yeah, I mean, it's a fairly familiar cover. I think Superman's got a car, and he's lifting it up, and there's a guy in the foreground who looks like he's running away.
Probably as many different versions of Superman in the comics as there have been actors playing Superman on television and in film.
Okay, so over the decades, his look has changed.
A little bit, yes, but I mean, the final, everyone recognizes the overall design of Superman, especially the iconic S on his chest.
That's pretty much a dead giveaway.
Blue
black hair waving over his head.
With the one curl coming down in the front.
Joe Shuster had a particular style of doing the comics, and if it wasn't for Joe Shuster, I don't think the comics would look like they do today.
Okay, so you really inspired other artists coming after you?
I'm sure he did. I mean, Superman is, whenever most people say superhero, you think a guy in a cape and some, you know, brightly colored spandex tights, you know, standing there with his hands on his hips and giving a dramatic frown into the distance.
And so that really didn't exist before Superman.
No,
that look.
I just read a quote from Joe Shuster about why he had a cape. He said he was thinking of a way to show flight and movement. And he said the best way to do that was to have a cape.
Interesting. Well, to find out more about this story and kind of how it all ends up, Supermen opens tomorrow at Theater 810. You can buy tickets by calling Theater 810 or going to the Eventbrite site.
I forget what it is. Oh my God. And it's on the poster.
On the poster. You can go to AUISupermen@eventbrite.com. Mm-hmm. Or call the theater. Opening tomorrow runs through the weekend. There is a Sunday matinee. Two shows on Saturday, so you have an opportunity. Supermen by Adam Esquenazi Douglas, and it is the regional premiere of this particular version of the play featuring the evil guy.
Yeah.
Well, thank you both for coming by, and we look forward to future AUI productions.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.